I'm Ashley Legasic.
And I'm Catherine DeClercq.
And we make up CTV's newest podcast, Life Unmasked.
We'll bring you everything you need to know about exactly how we're going to return to normal life post-pandemic.
New episodes come out every Thursday morning on iHeartRadio, and they're available on all streaming platforms later in the day.
We hope you'll tune in.
From the runway to the roadway, the surprise from the sky for highway drivers in Markham. A small plane touching down right beside them on the 407.
The pilot says there was simply no other option. Their engine may have failed, but they succeeded, avoiding catastrophe and walking away safely. Good evening. Just imagine being there, a live lane of traffic suddenly becoming an emergency landing strip.
The person at the controls crediting his training for keeping him calm and collected in that moment of chaos. CTV's John Musselman is live in Markham tonight with more on this remarkable story. John.
Well, Michelle, Nathan, the plane took off from the runway behind me here at Buttonville. As you mentioned, around 2,000 feet, the engine started sputtering. The pilot said he had to make a quick decision. That decision was Highway 407. This 407 traffic camera picked up the landing. Watch the top of your screen. We've highlighted the aircraft. You can see it descending. A white truck passes through the frame. Then you see the small single-engine Cherokee Piper touchdown on the highway. It comes to a rolling stop against the median.
We have an airplane on the ground.
There were two pilots on this plane. One of them is a flight instructor. He told police he experienced engine trouble just after takeoff from nearby Buttonville Airport in Markham.
We climbed about 2,000 feet. Once we were flying en route heading towards Buttonville, we started to have experience an engine failure. It started sputtering. Once we turned back to Buttonville, or turned towards Buttonville, we knew we couldn't make the field. It was a really tough decision. At that point, we had to turn for right for the field, or for the highway.
The pilot says he could not make it back to the airport, and they had to make a quick decision.
We had no options. It was either this or the buildings. So, like I said, I'm happy that this was the only option, and it worked out.
The pilot declared a mayday. Fortunately, traffic was light on the 407. This happened just before 11 a.m. on the eastbound lanes near Woodbine. In this CTV chopper video, you can see how close the plane was to the airport as other planes passed through the camera frame on their way to the runway just north of the 407.
And as the plane is coming in on an emergency approach, stall speed is likely probably around 60 or 70 miles an hour in that area. So traffic would be seeing that airplane coming down and merge to avoid. I had no indication that there was any conflict with any traffic. You know, people slow down naturally, and the airplane rolled to a stop here on the highway.
According to aviation records, the plane is registered with the Caribbean Flying Club based in Grimsby. Police say it was on its first flight after going through a 100-hour inspection. No one in the plane or on the ground was injured. The pilot says he's thankful it all worked out.
We just got cleared that as soon as we wanted to make the committed to landing, the started springing up on us. So like I said, someone was watching over us, and I'm glad they were because it ended up being successful and safe.
It was a bizarre sight for motorists who were seen taking pictures as they passed the plane parked on the highway. One lane of traffic was able to pass during the investigation, but eventually police had to temporarily close all eastbound lanes when a large crane was brought to the site to put the plane on a truck. It was taken to Buttonville Airport for a mechanical inspection. And that's where the plane remains here at Buttonville Airport again. No one injured here, no drivers, and everyone on the plane is okay. Reporting live from the scene, I'm John Musselman. I'll send it back to you.
Thank you, John. To a story touching a nerve and raising questions about fairness. A couple in a Toronto condo asked to leave because they aren't married.
We first told you about their situation last night. The dispute now moving beyond their building and straight into Ontario's halls of power. CTV's John Woodward is live downtown with more. John, what is the government saying?
Nathan, MPPs from all elected parties said that they are expressing their shock at what's happening in this condo. And just a few moments ago, we also heard from the Ministry of Government and Consumer Services saying they're looking into this as well.
I had a partner move in and had just no issue whatsoever. Avanti Ramachandran had lived in this condo at Wellesley and Yonge Streets for 6 years when she invited her boyfriend Samir to live with her. She says there was nothing unusual about it.
We were never asked for any proof of our relationship or marriage.
But a marriage certificate is what Michael Cohen says condo management asked him for when his boyfriend moved in. And when he couldn't provide it, he says the condo manager with TSE Management Services asked them to leave.
I think it just comes down to, you know, a human rights kind of issue.
At a Queen's Park committee meeting, MPPs seem to agree, quizzing top bureaucrats.
However, as a proud member of a government that champions equal rights for all Ontarians, Chair, I was troubled by recent reports suggesting that a gay couple is facing challenges living in their condominium.
You're unable to kind of enforce basic human rights in such an egregious violation as what's been described. What other consumer protections are slipping?
Condo corporations are self-governing, and as self-governing, it's generally up to the condo community to make rules for that work for its owners.
The deputy minister said the couple could file a human rights complaint over the condo's definition of the kinds of families it allows. The condo defines itself as single family, which according to its own rules means a social unit consisting of parents and their children, whether natural or adopted, and includes other relatives if living with the primary group.
The definition of family that appears to be the definition followed by this corporation is way too restrictive. This is not 1945 here.
But the MPP for the area says she's hoping it won't take a human rights complaint for the condo to relent.
I think we have a clear case here where, you know, the condo board should be doing the right thing.
If you want to live with someone, like, you don't have to be married to do so.
And Ramachandran says that should be true for everyone.
We've reached out several times to the condo board through management company TSE Management Services. We have not heard back. The Ministry of Consumer and Government Services did tell us in a statement discrimination is unacceptable and they're looking into the specifics of the situation as well as reviewing the Condo Act itself to better protect condo residents. Reporting live from Bay and Wellesley, I'm John Woodward. Nathan, back to you.
All right, thank you, John. The majority of Ontarians have had two and is a third now on the horizon. Another shot of protection against COVID-19 is already in the works elsewhere, so what about here?
Some people are already eligible to roll up their sleeves once again, but how soon could that expand? CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello is live with more. Colin.
Well, tonight, the Minister of Health says they are not ruling out third doses for the general public, but it is ultimately up to the National Advisory Committee on Immunization and the Chief Medical Officer of Health to make that call.
For many in the healthcare sector, it's almost been a year since they received their COVID-19 vaccines, and concerns about waning immunity are rising to the surface.
After any infection, not just COVID, but a lot of respiratory infections, after about 6 months, your initial neutralizing antibody response wanes a bit in the respiratory passages. So what this means is that, let's say it's 6 months after an infection, if you're exposed to the same virus, you could potentially get symptoms again.
Those concerns have sparked a new conversation about third doses. In British Columbia, the province made waves this week by allowing every single resident to get a booster shot in 2022.
As of sort of probably the middle of January, we'll start opening things up to everybody from 12 on up.
But in Ontario, the Minister of Health says the province has yet to make that decision.
We're ready to go, but that's going to be subject to the recommendations of Health Canada, NACI, and our Chief Medical Officer of Health.
Right now, the province has been focusing on residents of high-risk congregate settings, including long-term care and higher-risk retirement homes, those who are receiving active treatment for cancers and solid tumors, those with moderate or severe immunodeficiencies, and those with stage 3 or advanced untreated HIV.
We are continuing to look at other groups, but that is within the realm of the Chief Medical Officer of Health to make any recommendations concerning that.
But an infectious disease specialist says re-inoculating against the same strain might not be an effective strategy.
So for this population, I think, say, for example, community-dwelling people over the age of 65, I think that giving a third dose makes sense. Advanced immune suppression. It makes sense. But as a general public thing and for otherwise healthy healthcare workers, I don't think that right now a third dose is necessarily indicated.
Should there be a new strain of COVID-19, he said, then booster shots might have to be necessary.
To date, Ontario has received 26 million doses of the COVID-19 vaccine from the federal government. There are still 3.6 million doses left over in the province's stockpile. Those, though, the government says are reserved for those who need their first and second doses and those who qualify for the booster shots as of right now. Reporting live at Queen's Park, I'm Colin DeMello. Now back to you.
All right, thank you, Colin. Across the province, nearly 88% of eligible people have received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. And more than 84% of eligible people are considered fully vaccinated. That represents more than 10.9 million people in Ontario.
And as Colin noted, there are people currently able to get in line for their booster.
And as CTV's Janice Golding reports, demand is picking up.
The Humber River Hospital's new vaccination clinic, which moved to Weston Road from the Downsview Arena at the beginning of October, is currently seeing about 200 people a day.
I just got the second dose.
The first.
This is my second dose.
My first shot.
And 3 to 6 of those patients are coming in for a booster shot.
Well, I have a skin disease.
People like Giuseppe Palea, who is being treated with immunosuppressive medication.
For me, it's very important. Fighting two diseases at the same time.
Anita Bartwell is also immunocompromised.
I had a virtual appointment with my doctor the other week and asked him about it, and he recommended it and wrote the letter for me.
On October the 7th, the government expanded third dose eligibility to people at greater risk for more severe outcomes from COVID-19.
We definitely see the population that are immunocompromised that either come with a referral or they talk to us about their medications and they qualify.
Anyone else will have to wait for a booster shot if and when the government deems it necessary.
I would most likely get it, but I have to see like the research behind it and give it some time.
We'll see. I mean, if they have two shots already, why boost a shot again?
I think that if it's to protect us, it's important to take it. I will come.
This is for safety. This is for health. So we have to protect each other. We have to, you know, respect each other.
Those currently eligible for their third doses told us today they're relieved to have been offered another layer of protection.
Better be safe than not sorry.
It's a great feeling, and I feel very privileged to be able to come here and be able to get it.
Of course, Toronto Public Health currently says for the general population, two doses of the COVID-19 vaccine provides strong protection against severe illness and hospitalization. Janice Golding, CTV News.
And be sure to visit our website for a full list of people in Ontario who are currently eligible for a third vaccine dose. You can find that information at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
Just ahead, why Toronto's mayor is defending his ties to the family and company as the boardroom battles at Rogers Communications enters the courts. A beautiful fall day. Hopefully the trend continues for a little bit. Michelle Jobin's here with a look at the current conditions. Michelle. Well, looks like we lost the audio. We'll get back to Michelle in a few moments.
Let's move to some other news now. As she fixes the mic, Canada's Indigenous community may finally get the apology it's been seeking. The Vatican says Pope Francis is willing to visit Canada.
Indigenous leaders want the Catholic Church to take responsibility for its role in the residential school system, and that should include criminal charges and reparations. CTV's Creason Adjikate reports.
The thought of a papal apology in Canada for the trauma inflicted in residential schools brings many emotions to residential school survivor Brenda Dubois.
You're going to come here and apologize? For what? Will they actually state what they are sorry for? We are the ones that have to do the reparation work to repair the damage that they did.
The statement from the Vatican was short and to the point. In the context of the pastoral process, which has been underway for some time of reconciliation with Indigenous peoples, His Holiness has expressed his willingness to go to the country at a date to be set later.
I'm not a Catholic, but I think that for the Holy Father, in whom many of the faithful saw a lot of hope when he was installed, full and complete recognition of the harm caused to Indigenous peoples.
It's not expected that the Pope will visit Canada until next year.
From his own experience in Argentina and Latin America, he's always been sensitive to the situation of the Indigenous peoples.
The Canadian Conference of Catholic Bishops have been in discussion with Indigenous leadership to secure an apology.
For those who have been affected by
the influences maybe of systems that have, in a sense, caused them great suffering and pain, such as the residential schools, that they can hear directly from the Holy Father.
Indigenous advocates say the Pope needs to apologize for the Catholic Church's role in residential schools, but also take many other steps.
Providing whatever funds are needed to do all of the memorial and identifying of these unmarked graves, to also compensate the victims, to repudiate the doctrine of discovery.
Indigenous, Métis, and Inuit leaders are still planning on a trip to the Vatican to meet with the Pope on securing that apology. That meeting is expected to take place in mid-December. Krisen Ashkate, CTV News, Ottawa.
An inquest into the death of Samuel Brown will be held next month. The 18-year-old died in 2018 while living at a school for the blind in Brantford on weekdays. A coroner's report said he died of natural causes, but Brown's family says the ambulance report indicates he was found unresponsive in the morning with vomit in his airway. Brown was born with a genetic condition that also left him deaf. He required monitoring and assistance from others. The inquest is expected to last 5 days and we'll hear from about 13 witnesses. It begins November 15th.
All right, back to Michelle. How long will this sunshine last? Hopefully for a few days.
Well, Nathan, we are going to get more sunshine on the way tomorrow. We had an absolutely beautiful day today. Tomorrow, not quite as much sun, not quite as warm, and a little breezier, but it's still going to be a good fall day. Not a lot to show you on satellite and radar because we have, for the most part, clear skies. A little bit more cloud cover to the east and to the southwest of the GTA. Now, in terms of winds right now, 15 kilometers an hour out of the northeast. Tomorrow, they're shifting around to be from the east, and it's going to be a little gustier. Temperatures right now still holding on to the low teens for the most part, closer to the GTA and in southwestern Ontario. We reached a high of 16, which is fabulous. Right now we're sitting at 12 at the islands, 14 at Pearson Airport with sunshine, 4 degrees overnight. I'll have your full 7-day forecast coming up soon.
All right, thanks, Michelle. It's a boardroom battle exposing a family rift at Rogers.
But it's another player in the corporate back and forth who's speaking out tonight, and that person is also the mayor of Toronto. CTV's Raheem Ladani joins us in studio with more. Raheem.
Well, Michelle and Nathan, Mayor John Tory has long been clear about his affiliation with the Rogers family, but some of his actions are now being questioned, and court documents are giving us a clearer picture of what led to the infighting within Rogers Communications.
The Rogers family drama has moved from the boardroom to the courtroom, where a BC judge will rule if Edward Rogers was in his right to use his power as head of the family trust to remove the company's board of directors after they and other members of his family ousted him as company chair.
Pretty much a bombshell allegation that there was an 11th hour reversal to turf the CEO, Joe Natale. That was what started all of this.
Court documents filed on behalf of Edward claim members of the Rogers family were on board to replace CEO Joe Natale and voted in favor of his retirement following a deal to merge with Shaw. But 2 days later, the board tabled resolutions rescinding that decision. Edward's own mother, Loretta, says his affidavit is untrue, claiming once she had more information, she developed an unbiased perspective and reversed course. Meanwhile, Toronto Mayor John Tory is defending his position as a member of the same family trust.
I made a commitment to my friend, who had such a huge role in my life, and his family, who have been so important to my life, to my business career, and to my personal life, that I would try to help.
Tory's ties to the Rogers family date back decades, including taking over as CEO of Rogers Multimedia, running the cable business for 8 years. Since 2014, Tory has declared an interest on any item being debated at City Hall potentially related to Rogers 41 times, citing an ongoing interest in the Rogers family trust.
I am compensated for this role, as other people are who are in similar kinds of positions with.
Earlier this week, Tory claimed he only helps the family in his spare time. But Martha Rogers, one of Ted Rogers' daughters, says, "That's not the truth, John. We were there 9 to 10 hours outside of you leaving for 45 minutes to do a press conference, unless the mayor has Thursdays off." Today, Tory appeared to backtrack.
I did attend a meeting on a weekday, and it did take quite a number of hours. I was still at my desk at 6 o'clock in the morning before that meeting started, and I went to an art event after it was finished.
Adding another wrinkle in this public battle for power.
Now, some legal experts say the trust, which Edward Rogers controls, generally has the upper hand, but the trust and company will both plead their case on November 1st. Reporting live, I'm Raheem Ladani. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Raheem. There is growing concern tonight about safety in one downtown neighborhood. Some believe the problems are linked to a temporary shelter in the area.
But advocates say the issues speak to a larger issue around housing. CTV's Mike Walker reports.
Some kind of a narcotic spray.
Joan Hunter says this is a daily occurrence outside her jazz bar near Yonge and Dundas.
Yeah, this area is a very popular area for them to inject themselves.
An ongoing problem, Hunter says, escalated when the city leased the nearby Bond Hotel in August 2020 as a temporary shelter for the homeless and also coming from nearby safe injection sites.
I've dealt with drug paraphernalia and damage to our outside doors, just unsafe working conditions, and it seems to be getting worse.
About 100 meters away at St. Michael's Choir School, parents say it's been a nightmare. They've documented drug paraphernalia littered on school property, vandalism, and say they found knives left on the steps of the school. They feel their concerns are being ignored.
We've got kids as young as 7 years old in this school, and there are people injecting drugs right on the school steps as they're exiting the building.
We feel very scared. Every day that my children come to school, I am scared.
The lease, which has been extended, is set to expire in April. The shelter is operated by Dixon Hall.
Most of the people who are using on the streets are not residents of the Bond necessarily. They may be people who are drawn to the neighborhood because of other services that exist in the neighborhood. And there are systems in place. There's a safety plan.
A working group meets regularly to address the neighborhood's concerns. The city says a number of measures have been put in place, including 24/7 security and community safety teams that pick up needles.
So there are a number of interventions and actions taken to mitigate the social challenges that we see. But ultimately, the long-term solution that will help resolve all of this conflict is to get permanent housing.
The city has applied to the federal government for funding to buy hotels and convert them into long-term housing. The possible locations are not clear, and there is concern the shelter at the Bond Hotel will become permanent.
Just can't have that happen. It's not compatible with school children.
Does not make sense to me. You would take homeless people, put them in a shelter in the center of your tourist area.
The city says its plans for temporary shelters are evolving and can't say if the lease at the Bond Hotel will be extended or whether the shelter will become permanent. Mike Walker, CTV News.
Returning to our pandemic coverage, Health Canada has yet to approve vaccines for younger kids, but experts say it could happen soon.
And already there are recommendations from Ontario's science table to offer shots in schools. CTV's Beth McDonnell is live with more on this. Beth.
Michelle, in Toronto alone, there are more than 200,000 children in the 5 to 11 age category. Public health says it's planning clinics in all corners of the city, and the science table says by doing it in schools, it will make the process more equitable. School, it's the place young children go 5 days a week to play, to learn, and possibly to get vaccinated against COVID-19.
That would be awesome.
How come?
Because it's convenient and we'll know what gets done.
As long as we're with them and we can give them that stability and security that it's safe, I think it's okay.
Health Canada is looking at approving the shot for 5 to 11-year-olds. With that, Ontario's COVID-19 science advisory table is recommending strategies to get the job done, starting with schools.
What we have seen in the literature is that when you provide something publicly available in a place where all children have access to it from all walks of life, it is the most equitable solution.
In a brief, the table says school-based programs have a high impact and effective approach. That healthcare provider recommendation increases uptake, along with reminder systems for missed or second doses, along with public health communication campaigns. There is some uneasiness out there, even for families planning to give their kid the shot.
You know, I guess the long-term effects are always a concern, but anything to get through this.
The brief highlights the importance to build and leverage trust and avoid one-size-fits-all approaches, as well as special considerations for reaching at-risk populations, along with reaching Black, Indigenous, and all racialized communities. Toronto Public Health is eyeing locations including mass immunization, community, and school clinics, along with pharmacies and doctor's offices.
Peel Public Health says it has a plan involving schools.
We actually have 136 school clinics that are booked over the next couple months, and more school clinics are being planned and brought online every single day.
Some families welcome a variety of locations.
As long as it's done by a registered nurse or a doctor, I guess, who knows how to do it properly.
Hoping wherever younger children get the shot, school will become safer.
It's like very limited. Like we have to wear masks and stuff, and we can't talk while we're eating.
More like school before the pandemic.
The co-author of The Science Brief says a multi-prong approach is important because people are different. Not everyone may be aware the vaccine is available and recommended. Reporting live, I'm Beth McDonnell. Nathan, back to you.
All right, thank you, Beth. Public Health Ontario is reporting 321 new cases in its most recent update. 203 of those are among people who either aren't fully vaccinated or their vaccination status is unknown. Nearly 31,000 tests have been processed in the last 24 hours, and the province's positivity rate is sitting at 1.4%.
384 more cases are considered resolved, raising that total to more than 585,000 over the course of the pandemic. 10 additional deaths are linked to the virus, one of which occurred more than a month ago. 9,862 lives have been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario.
Tonight's regional breakdown includes 66 new cases in the city of Toronto, with 33 in York Region. There are 17 new cases in Halton Region, with 16 in Peel and 15 in Niagara. Hamilton has 11 new cases, with 7 in Durham.
Turning to the investigation into the fatal shooting on the set of Alec Baldwin's new movie.
Authorities in New Mexico providing their first significant update on their findings. CTV's Zoraida Allman's in studio with more on this. Zoraida.
Nathan and Michelle, investigators say they believe they have the gun that fired the fatal shot and have also recovered the spent shell casing. Now, according to documents filed, the assistant director yelled out "cold gun," meaning no live rounds, before handing it over to Alec Baldwin. We now know that wasn't the case. Investigators say they believe a single live round first hit cinematographer Helena Hutchins before hitting director Joel Souza, lodging into his shoulder.
The facts are clear. A weapon was handed to Mr. Baldwin. The weapon is functional and fired a live round, killing Ms. Hutchins and injuring Mr. Souza.
Authorities also recovered 500 rounds of ammunition, including both blanks, dummy rounds, and apparent live rounds of ammunition on the film set.
We're going to determine how those got there, why they were there, because they shouldn't have been there.
According to investigators, two other people, the armorer and the assistant director, handled or inspected the loaded firearm prior to Alec Baldwin firing the gun. The accidental shooting happened last Thursday during a rehearsal on the set of Baldwin's movie Rust being filmed in New Mexico. In all, about 600 pieces of evidence, including three firearms, have been collected. And while investigators say it's too soon to determine whether charges will be laid, all options, they say, are on the table.
And if the sheriff's office determines during our investigation a crime has occurred and probable cause exists, an arrest or arrests will be made and charges will be filed.
They say nobody has been ruled out, including Alec Baldwin, who remains an active part of the investigation. Now, the projectile retrieved from director Joel Souza's shoulder will be analyzed by the FBI's crime lab. About 100 people who were on the set still need to be interviewed. They say so far everybody is cooperating, but the investigation is far from over. I'm Zoraida Allman. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Zoraida. With 100 days to go, Olympic organizers detailed what precautions will be taken to keep COVID-19 out of the Beijing Games. Participants will be strictly isolated from the general population. They must remain in a closed loop for training, competing, transport, dining, and accommodations. Anyone violating the restrictions could be expelled. Participants will also be tested regularly for the virus before and during the games. Family, spectators, and sponsors from outside China will not be allowed to attend. All participants must have been fully vaccinated at least 14 days prior to departing for China.
Still ahead, how this man who started with modest savings managed to buy 17 homes in just over a decade, and why he thinks he's part of Toronto's housing market problem.
I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, the Bank of Canada kept its key interest rate steady today, but did signal higher rates could be on the way. There are concerns that inflation is driving up the cost of living, but higher interest rates would affect mortgages and lines of credit. We speak with the experts. That story's just ahead.
Lots of sunshine today, but we have had a lot of rain so far this week, and there will be more. But taking a look at our totals so far, we've reached 82.4 millimeters of rain for the month of October 2021. Yesterday, we had 8.4 millimeters, so we're over our monthly average of 74.5 millimeters. Now, the rain's not on the way tomorrow for those of us in the city of Toronto and the great GTA. We're going to have a high of 13 degrees, breezy at times, and a mix of sun and cloud. More cloud later on, and that's signaling what's to come, because overnight into Friday, things are going to change. And I'm going to have those details coming up for you in your 7-day forecast. Stay with us. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
The Bank of Canada held its key interest rate at 0.25% today, a rate that it has stayed committed to throughout the pandemic.
But it's now sending signals it could raise rates sooner than expected to combat inflation, which has been increasing the cost of living. Pat Foran has our story on Consumer Alert. Pat.
Nathan and Michelle, interest rates were expected to stay low until late next year as the economy recovers from the pandemic. But there are concerns about the rising costs of groceries, energy, and household goods. Now some analysts feel the bank could raise rates early next year.
The Bank of Canada held steady on its interest rate policy, but sent signals higher interest rates could be coming. The government has been stimulating the economy. Inflation is at almost a two-decade high, and supply chain issues are driving up prices. The bank ended its bond-buying stimulus program and suggested higher rates could be on the way.
Now, so I'm just looking at the Bloomberg model. What you're looking at is essentially a April hike fully priced in. That is far sooner than we had expected.
While Canadians have been enjoying historically low interest rates, at some point they will trend upward.
This low interest rate environment that we're in will not stay there forever.
Higher rates could cool inflation, but they will also lead to higher payments for anyone with a mortgage or a line of credit. Some analysts have suggested there could be as many as 3 rate hikes next year. Others aren't so sure.
I think if there are changes, it's going to be very gradual, and I don't think it's going to be anything dramatic.
Leah Zlatkin is a mortgage expert who is advising her clients to hold steady.
I don't predict 3 increases. I don't even predict 2. I foresee maybe 1 increase happening, and then the Bank of Canada watching the market steadily to figure out where to go next.
If central banks raise interest rates too quickly, it could also hurt the recovery from the pandemic.
As there is the possibility that they wind up choking off the recovery here, that they wind up tightening global financial conditions.
Employment numbers, labor costs, and monitoring inflation moving forward will all be factors considered before a rate hike takes place.
And if rates rise next year, homeowners with variable rate mortgages may want to switch to a fixed rate mortgage. Just make sure you do the math. And remember, the penalty for breaking a fixed rate mortgage is much higher than for a variable one. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
It is a beautiful evening in our fair city. Look at that shot. And the sun, it has such an impact on mood. When you've been deprived of it for a few days, it makes you feel good to finally see it again.
Yeah, it does make a big difference, no question about that. And hopefully this trend continues a little bit, Michelle.
Well, at least until tomorrow, Michelle and Nathan. And then there is more in the 7-day, but we do have a little bit of rain to contend with as we get into Friday and Saturday. So lots to talk about there. Weather is brought to you by Trane, the most reliable heating and cooling brand. It's hard to stop a train. So temperature has also been the story today because we've been trending above seasonal. Temperatures have been very comfortable. Winds have been on the lighter side. So that's been quite nice. 14 degrees in the city of Toronto right now. We reached a high of 16 degrees at Pearson Airport. So normal at this time of the year is 11 degrees, a very seasonal overnight low of 4 degrees. We were twice as warm as this overnight last night at 8, but we had a lot of cloud cover and, of course, a lot of rain as well. With the clearing skies tonight, 4 degrees is where we're going to be, and it's going to feel a little on the cooler side. And as we get into the day tomorrow, we are looking at the winds picking up a little bit out of the east. So in terms of our temperatures, though, things will be comfortable. If you were in southwestern Ontario, look for a cloud to move in earlier. But here's a look at how things will be around the region. 16 in Welland, 12 in Aurora, 14 in Collingwood. Lots of sunshine on tap for areas east of the GTA or in the eastern part of the GTA, 12 degrees in Uxbridge. And this is what we're looking at satellite and radar right now. So there's those really clearing skies giving us those cooler overnight lows. It'll be a good night to see the stars. So we have that twist of low pressure off to the east of us that caused all the rain, and another one on the way. And it's going to be heavier for some residents of southern Ontario. High pressure moving out and the next area of low pressure moving in as we get late into the day tomorrow. I'm going to show you how that plays out on our forecast radar. So as we get into the morning, a little bit more cloud cover. Keep in mind things will be breezy. Still comfortable, though, in terms of temperature. Late in the day, here's that area of low pressure moving into southwestern Ontario. That's as we get, into Friday morning, and then Friday through the day, I should say, increasing cloud cover overnight. And then into Friday, this pushes in, and then we don't really see it fully moving into the GTA until we get later in the day. About 5 to 10 at least, Friday overnight to Sunday, Saturday, 13 degrees for tomorrow, 10 with that chance of showers moving into rain for Friday, and then Saturday unsettled as well. Looking good though for Halloween, 13 degrees and a mix of sun and cloud. Nathan, back to you.
Also tonight, is your dog in need of a little more companionship? Looking for a playmate that can keep up? Now there's an app for that. Some of the most serious heart conditions a person can experience.
And a new clinic in Toronto is helping make sure patients don't fall through the cracks after they leave hospital. Our health reporter Pauline Chan has more.
About half of the people who suffer from aortic dissection die before they even get to hospital.
So it is very serious. So it's when the layers of the aorta split. And it's a life-threatening condition and generally requires emergency surgery.
Surgery is generally done to repair the major blood vessel in the heart. But after a patient goes home, what next?
As we know, these patients have an ongoing risk of death, ongoing risk of needing reinterventions, more aortic surgery. And if we can follow them along, then we can plan the surgeries accordingly.
A new study looked at almost 900 patients who had aortic dissections in Ontario and found 4% died within a year of their surgery, 14% died within 5 years, and at 10 years, almost 30% had died. Dr. Jennifer Chung says that shows the need for comprehensive follow-up for these patients after surgery.
What we don't want to see is that patients get lost to follow-up, develop aneurysms without knowing it, rupture in the community, and then after, you know, you survive the initial event and then die later on from another aortic complication.
Last year, the Peter Munk Cardiac Center opened a new clinic devoted to ongoing care of the aorta. It involves regular imaging, medications, and counseling for patients with specific heart conditions, especially aortic dissection. And Chung says it's making a difference.
Before, only 20% of patients followed recommended imaging guidelines following aortic surgery, but since the clinic opened, 100% have been keeping up with imaging. Pauline Chan, CTV News.
The organization behind the Grammys says it is considering whether to strip R. Kelly of his awards. The Recording Academy's CEO says it's looking at whether to rescind the singer's three trophies following his conviction on numerous sex crimes charges earlier this year. The only act ever stripped of a Grammy was in 1990 when Milli Vanilli admitted to lip-syncing their award-winning album.
It appears the greatest show on earth will return with one big difference. Their plans to bring back the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus, but without animal acts. The three-ring circus shut down in 2017 after a 146-year run. One reason, ticket sales declined when the elephant acts came to an end following pressure from animal rights groups. An announcement on the return of the Big Tops expected next year.
A master pumpkin carver is paying tribute to one of the biggest winners at this year's Emmys. Artist Jeanette Paras carved a 700-pound pumpkin into the head of Ted Lasso, played by Jason Sudeikis in the Apple TV Plus show of the same name. She says it's the largest pumpkin she's ever put out on her front porch. Her past works include, you see there, a Baby Yoda pumpkin last year, as well as a Trumpkin in 2016.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Lastman's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
Once we turned back to Bunville, or turned towards Bunville, we knew we couldn't make the field. It was a really tough decision. At that point, we had to turn for right for the field, or for the highway.
Updating our top stories, a quick decision turned potential disaster into a textbook landing. A plane made an emergency landing on the 407 in Markham this morning after a mechanical issue during its first flight following a 100-hour inspection.
As a general public thing, and for otherwise healthy healthcare workers, I don't think that right now third dose is necessarily indicated.
And the province is considering whether to authorize third COVID-19 vaccine doses, as it's been nearly a year since many healthcare workers received their shots. The health minister says the decision will be subject to Health Canada recommendations. On the markets, the Canadian dollar was up a fraction to close at 80.89 US. American benchmark oil lost $2 to end the day at 82.66 a barrel. And the TSX Composite Index lost 218 points to close at 20,954.
Managing to afford one property in the GTA is out of reach for so many people. So imagine owning 17.
Hard to believe, but that's the reality for one man. But as CTV's Scott Lightfoot reports, he believes his success is actually an example of what's wrong with the system.
Typically, it's original hardware from like 1920s, 1940s.
Sal Jaggi is walking through an Etobicoke home he recently purchased. But unlike many people his age, it's far from his first home.
Currently, I own 17 properties in Toronto.
The 36-year-old saved up his own money and bought his first house in 2010.
Moved into a basement of a very similar bungalow like this, and I rented out the main floor. It was mainly covering most of my mortgage cost, and eventually started buying more homes that were falling apart and turning them into livable spaces.
Now Jaggi wants to see the city relax its restrictions on building more units on available land.
Supply can only be increased if we allow more units to be built on existing land. So when I buy homes like this and I create two units out of them, I'm actually increasing the supply and hence solving a problem of supply.
Many agree supply is an issue in this real estate market, but not everyone agrees this is the way to fix it.
It is far better to build new housing supply like townhomes, duplexes, big purpose-built rentals, so that we can provide safe and affordable housing options to Ontarians.
The provincial opposition housing critic says the government must enact taxation measures to level the playing field.
And it is really critical the government clamp down on investor-led speculation by moving forward on taxation measures like a vacant home tax and a speculation tax, so it's easier for first-time home buyers to bid on a home and win that bid.
Jaggi agrees in part, saying he believes an incremental tax increase is appropriate for those, like him, who own multiple homes.
If a person is owning 6, 7, 8 properties, they should be taxed a little differently from somebody who's trying to get in, such as the first-time home buyer.
Jaggi is more than an investor. He's also a real estate broker, and he says he's constantly helping first-time home buyers get into the same market that he's managed to find success in. Scott Lightfoot, CTV News.
And you can read more about how Sahil Jaggi reached this point on our website. Multi-platform writer Sean Davidson has that story at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
The Pope's willingness to visit Canada is attracting plenty of attention.
And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by Christina Tenaglia and Lena Latifat. Christina, you'll be speaking with Catholic and Indigenous leaders.
Yeah, this has been a long time coming. The request had been made time and time again on behalf of Indigenous leaders, residential school survivors, lawmakers, for Pope Francis to come here on Canadian soil and apologize. But Indigenous leaders and those in the Indigenous community are saying an apology is not enough without action and without reparations, real action and reparations. We're going to get some reaction to that. I should point out the Pope's visit. There's no real timeline for this. It's also unlikely he's going to come this year.
And Lena, you'll be talking with health experts about recommendations for vaccinating kids.
That's right, Michelle. A lot of parents in this country waiting for Health Canada to approve Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine for kids ages 5 to 11, and that approval could be coming soon. So here in Ontario, the province's science table is looking at ways to increase vaccine uptake, noting the best place to vaccinate kids is actually at schools. So what could the vaccine rollout look like for kids in Ontario? We'll ask the director of the science table, Dr. Peter Uni.
Lena, Christina, thank you so much. And CP24 Tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9. Finally tonight, everyone needs a little companionship, even canines.
True, and now there's an app for that. CTV's Sean Lethong reports.
If you think that your dog might be looking for a playmate, you might want to try Pawmates, a free app that helps match dogs together.
Well, it's very similar to Tinder.
Swipe left or swipe right, and you can find dogs in your area looking for a friend.
You swipe right on a person, and they've swiped right on you. Then it starts a chat.
Users are then free to schedule a meetup. Creator Colin Jarvis Gom started the app when he saw a need in his own life.
It actually started with my own dog. He was getting a little bit older.
His golden retriever named Pal didn't have the same energy as before and couldn't keep up with the younger dogs at the park.
I thought to myself that it would be great if we could find him some other playmates that were sort of more his speed.
27-year-old Jarvis Gom learned to code by watching YouTube, and soon after, Pawmates was born. Users create a profile with their dogs and start swiping, and they've grown quickly to 10,000 users, along with a strong presence on social media.
They can have their socialization, your own exercise, and the dog exercise too.
It's fabulous. I think it's such a fantastic way, number one, for the dogs to get together, socialize, and then for people.
So as the effectiveness of this app has been taking off, they're now thinking of expanding into other pet-related services. Beyond finding other dogs, users can find doggy daycare, walkers, groomers, vets, and stores. Next, they're thinking...
One is lost pet alerts.
Jarvis Gom wants to create a system to alert local areas if a pet has gone missing.
And another one would be adoptions.
Streamlining a process for finding a forever home. So while using the app, your match could be Gemma or Marty McFly, but some have become more than friends.
Some people have actually used it to meet significant others.
So like many at the park, you never know where your furry friends may lead you. Sean Lethong, CTV News.
Whether dogs are meeting up or just solo, tomorrow's a great day to be outside, Michelle.
You know, it's going to be another good one, Michelle. We are looking at temperatures being comfortable, being close to seasonal, if not just a little bit above, a little on the breezy side, though. So that's something that you need to consider. We are looking at a high of 13 degrees as we get into the day tomorrow, and winds will pick up out of the east, 30 to 50 kilometers an hour. Warm overnight Thursday into Friday, increasing cloud cover. Showers changing into rain Friday in the evening to high of 10 degrees. On Saturday and 9 degrees. And for Halloween, 13 degrees and a mix of sun and cloud. Back to you.
Thanks, Michelle. And be sure to join Zoraida Allman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 tonight begins momentarily on CP24.
For all of us here at CTV News, have a great night.